Today is Monday, the 12th of July, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. A power struggle is brewing in Haiti over who will lead the nation after the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse.
Ariel Henry declared himself the nation's highest authority over the weekend.
Plus, the world is on track to be home to more than 11 billion people at the start of the next century.
Behind the numbers is an enormous success in global health.
We'll have these stories and more next. One of Haiti's most powerful gang leaders said on Saturday that his men would take to the streets to protest the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. Reuters reporter Emily Wither starts us off.
He is one of Haiti's most powerful gang leaders, and his threats risk plunging Haiti into deeper chaos. Jimmy Cherizier, a former cop known as Barbecue, heads the so-called G9 Federation of Nine Gangs. In a new video address, he says his men would take to the streets to protest the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse.
Many people from the opposition and stinking bourgeoisie joined together to betray the president. It is a national and international conspiracy against the Haitian people. I ask all the gangs to mobilize, take to the streets. We demand explanations about the assassination of the president. We had a problem with the president, but we have never said that foreigners can enter our territory to kill the president.
Moïse was gunned down before dawn on Wednesday at his Port-au-Prince home. Haitian authorities say a unit of trained assassins comprising 26 Colombians and two Haitian Americans carried out the murder. The murder and the still murky plot behind it has caused further political instability in the long troubled country. The government is calling for US and UN assistance. The US says it has no plans to provide Haiti with military assistance for now, while the request to the UN would need Security Council authorization. Cherizier says his followers will practice legitimate violence and that it's time for the masters of the system, business magnates of Syrian and Lebanese descent who dominate parts of the economy, to give back the country. Some of the magnates had been at loggerheads with Moïse. Meanwhile, in a taped recording, Moïse's widow, Martine, who was also wounded in the attack, accused shadowy enemies of plotting his assassination to thwart democratic change. She says her husband had spoken of dark forces behind years of unrest, rivals and oligarchs angry about what he called his attempts to clean up government contracts and politics. Haitian officials have not provided a motive for the assassination or explained how the killers got past Moïse's security detail.
In addition, a power struggle is brewing in Haiti as the man appointed prime minister shortly before the assassination of its president last week said he, and not the acting premier, should lead the Caribbean nation and was forming a government to that effect. Reuters reporter Brian Wood has that part of the story.
Ariel Henry, who Moïse named prime minister just 2 days before his death, declared himself the nation's highest authority over the weekend. But he hadn't been sworn in by the time Moïse was killed, creating confusion over who should be the legitimate leader. Henry, a neurosurgeon by trade, told Reuters over the phone late Friday, quote, "After the president's assassination, I became the highest legal and regular authority because there was a decree nominating me." Claude Joseph, who Henry was meant to replace, was named interim prime minister in April and has so far taken the reins of power in response to Moïse's assassination. He's appealed to the U.S. for support and declared a 15-day state of emergency. Haiti's elections minister said Joseph would keep that role until elections are held in late September. Henry, however, said he would create a new electoral council, which would determine new dates for elections. Haiti's 1987 constitution states the head of the Supreme Court should take over as interim president, but the highest court's leader died last month, further complicating the political crisis. Haiti's Senate, which currently comprises just a third of its usual 30 senators, nominated its head, Joseph Lambert, on Friday to be interim president, according to documents reviewed by Reuters. There is also no sitting parliament to resolve the issue, as elections were postponed amid political unrest in 2019.
Emily Wither and Brian Wood report for Reuters News. As the United Nations marks World Population Day on July the 11th, its experts say that human innovation will continue to manage to outpace the growth in the number of humans living on the planet. VOA's Laurel Bowman is up next.
It took most of human history for the world's population to reach 1 billion people, but over the past 200 years, that number has increased sevenfold, according to the United Nations and other data. The world's population now stands at about 7.7 billion, and forecasters expect Earth will cross the 11 billion people mark around the turn of the next century. Rachel Snow is the branch chief for population and development at the United Nations Population Fund. She spoke to us via Skype.
Behind the numbers is an enormous success in global health, above all things. It's one of the great consequences of development that as human health has improved and mortality has declined, there has been a enormous growth of the human population.
The UN Population Fund tracks demographic trends and works with governments around the world on planning. The agency's experts report a big need to manage urbanization, as more than half of the world's population now lives in and around cities. Other experts have called for transnational migration plans. Large numbers of people may also be playing a role in climate change, but this issue is complex, according to the United Nations. Rachel Snow via Skype.
Very, very small amount of contribution to emissions are coming out of the developing world. So to focus on the numbers of fertility and family planning and growth in developing countries and to suggest that that is a cause of climate change is one of the great, let's say, detours to acknowledging that the responsibility lies in the global north on patterns of consumption.
And what about that international COVID-19 baby bust we've all been hearing about? The downward trend in births will pass, say experts, and they argue that access to health care for women will, over time, help regulate population growth. Again, the UN's Rachel Snow via Skype.
When people are able to have the number of children that they want, what we see is that in general, over time, people have fewer children, in part because the investments in children have risen. So the affordability of children, the cost of children has increased with the cost of education, for example.
Meantime, many top demographers say there is no perfect population number and that human innovation will continue to outpace population growth. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
A report by United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres accuses Russia of failing to abide by its obligations as the occupying power in Crimea in violation of international human rights and humanitarian law. The UN chief submitted his interim report on Friday to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein takes it from here.
Russia illegally seized and annexed the Crimean Peninsula from Ukraine in early 2014. This action, which has been widely condemned by the international community, triggered a conflict between Russian-backed separatists and the government in eastern Ukraine on April 6, 2014. Information in the Secretary General's report was gathered through remote monitoring because the UN was unable to enter Crimea to conduct a proper investigation. The report documents a wide range of human rights violations committed by Russian Federation security officials on the ground. The Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, Nada Al-Nashif, presented the report to the UN Council. She says her office has received new allegations of torture and ill treatment committed by Russian law enforcement agents against people in their custody.
Detainees from Crimea complained about poor conditions of detention in penitentiary institutions in Crimea and in the Russian Federation, which could amount to ill-treatment. Arbitrary placement in disciplinary cells, often in the form of solitary confinement, was used as a form of punishment for minor disciplinary offenses or as a method to coerce statements from detainees to incriminate third parties.
UN investigators have recorded the arbitrary arrests of 19 persons, including 11 Crimean Tatars, most on charges of terrorism and illegal possession of explosives. Al-Nashif says membership in certain religious groups, such as the Jehovah's Witnesses, are banned by the Russian Federation. She says the Orthodox Church of Ukraine has come under increasing pressure and is threatened with the loss of its two largest places of worship in Crimea. She says lawyers often get into trouble when defending such cases.
The office documented cases of deliberate hindrance and harassment of lawyers who actively defended the rights of their clients in high-profile cases investigated by the Federal Security Service of the Russian Federation in Crimea. Furthermore, courts continue to deliver guilty verdicts in high-profile proceedings during which fair trial guarantees were not fully respected.
Ukraine has submitted an updated resolution to the Council urging increased political and economic sanctions to encourage Russia to end its aggression and human rights violations. In response, Russia has accused Ukraine of neglecting human rights on its own territory, noting the situation of ethnic and linguistic communities in Ukraine was concerning. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Speaking at the end of the Group of 20 or G20 finance ministers meeting in Venice, Italy, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen urged her counterparts to do more to equalize the distribution of COVID-19 vaccines.
We are very concerned about the Delta variant and other variants that could emerge and threaten recovery. We are a connected global economy. What happens in any part of the world affects all other countries. We therefore recognize the importance of working together to speed the process of vaccination and have the goal of wanting to vaccinate 70% of the world's population next year.
Yellen said that the United States is pledging to share some 580 million vaccine doses, and according to the Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 tracker, nearly 3.5 billion vaccine doses have already been administered worldwide. Phil Mercer reports that psychologists are warning that the prolonged mental health consequences of COVID-19 will be like those felt after a war.
Experts say coronavirus lockdowns anywhere in the world can trigger stress, irritability, fear, and fatigue. There can be a disconnection from extended family and friends, causing loneliness. Uncertainty is another corrosive factor. In Australia, mental health charities estimated that about a third of people in Melbourne suffered some sort of depression during the nation's longest and strictest lockdown last year. Researchers also found that lockdowns are making some Australian children too anxious to go to school. Life in Australia was beginning to return to normal, but recently the highly contagious Delta variant was detected in several states and territories, threatening progress. Lockdowns were imposed in Sydney, Perth, Brisbane, and Darwin, subjecting millions of Australians to stay-at-home orders. Professor Susan Russell is a cognitive neuropsychologist at Swinburne Centre for Mental Health. She compares mental health consequences of the coronavirus crisis to a conflict.
There are very few pandemics that have lasted this long. So the comparison to wars, especially wars that last a very long time, is a good one. During the conflict time, so during the pandemic time, it elevated stress and anxiety, loneliness, confusion, poorer quality of life, all the things that we're seeing at the moment.
Mental health experts have said anxiety will haunt many Australians in the future, as uncertainty surrounds a slow vaccination rollout and the likelihood that international borders will stay closed for another year, separating families from relatives overseas. The lockdowns in Perth, Brisbane and Darwin were lifted in recent days, but Sydney, Australia's most populous city, remains under a stay-at-home order until at least Saturday. Authorities are racing to contain a COVID-19 outbreak linked to a limousine driver thought to have been infected with the Delta variant after transporting an international flight crew at Sydney Airport. Residents in lockdown can leave their homes for work, to buy groceries, to exercise, care for a relative, or to receive a coronavirus vaccine. Australia has recorded just under 31,000 COVID-19 infections since the pandemic began. 910 people have died. Only about 7% of the population of 25 million are fully vaccinated. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The U.S. is watching with deep concern as Taliban insurgents take control of more and more territory in Afghanistan, while American forces are quickly returning home under President Joe Biden's withdrawal orders. Pentagon spokesperson John Kirby made the remark on Sunday while appearing on the broadcast news program Fox News Sunday. Over nearly two decades, the U.S. has supplied Afghanistan with billions of dollars in weaponry to defend itself, but with Biden pulling U.S. troops out by August 31st, control of the country is increasingly uncertain. Taliban insurgents say that they already control 85% of the country, but that claim is contested. Kirby did not dispute a Fox News assessment that 13 million Afghans live under Taliban control, 10 million under Afghan government rule, and 9 million in contested regions. Concerns also remain about the plight of Afghan civilians, particularly women, and VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has that story.
With the end of the 20-year mission in Afghanistan weeks away, the spotlight turns to the fate of women and girls. The Taliban now claims they control 85% of the country, and humanitarian concerns are mounting. President Joe Biden says he has given assurances to Afghan President Ashraf Ghani.
In our meeting, I also assured Ghani that U.S. support for the people of Afghanistan will endure. We will continue to provide civilian and humanitarian assistance, including speaking out for the rights of women and girls.
Experts agree the Taliban are not meeting the conditions they agreed to in the U.S.-Taliban peace deal. Milan Verveer of the Georgetown Institute for Women, Peace and Security.
They have not seized the violence. They have continued to engage, they and their militant networks, horrible assassinations. We've been greatly concerned about what's happening to leaders in civil society, what's happened to women journalists, women judges, the girls' school bombing, just horrible, horrible atrocities that we are witnessing with great, great concern.
One of the 100 or so districts the Taliban have captured in recent weeks is Balkh in northern Afghanistan. Local residents say the Taliban have imposed repressive new rules in the district, ordering women to cover their heads and men to grow beards. Some districts are reporting girls' schools are being closed. Democratic Representative Seth Moulton says he has spent time in Afghanistan and is worried for the people he met, especially the women and girls.
I mean, it just breaks your heart to think about the Taliban taking over parts of the country and condemning women to essentially a life of servitude. And none of us want to see that happen. The president made it clear that ultimately this is up to the Afghan people and the Afghan government But I certainly hope that we do whatever we can to support women and girls in Afghanistan and all the progress that they've been able to make with America in the last 20 years.
Afghan forces are vowing to fight to win back control of some of the districts recently taken over by the Taliban as their American and NATO counterparts depart. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Protests against the jailing of former South African President Jacob Zuma spread from his hometown to the economic hub of Johannesburg on Sunday. Shops in the city were looted overnight, and a section of the major M2 highway was closed as some protests turned violent. Police say 62 people have been arrested in connection with riots since Zuma was imprisoned last Wednesday. The body of a 40-year-old man has been recovered from one of the shops that was set afire over the weekend. Zuma is serving a 15-month sentence for contempt of court after he failed to testify while being probed for corruption during his term as president from 2009 to 2018. Official results for Ethiopia's June 21st election are in, and Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's Prosperity Party won the most seats in the parliamentary contest. The outcome assures Abiy of another term in office. In what the Prime Minister called a free and fair election, the Prosperity Party garnered 410 of the 436 seats in the legislative body. Prime Minister Abiy still faces international pressure over the war in the northern Tigray region, and other areas of the country have still yet to vote in the most recent election, having their process delayed because of security concerns or other problems. Exit polls show that a snap election held on Sunday in Bulgaria failed to yield a clear winner. It's the country's second election since April. Two surveys show that the new anti-elite There Is Such a People Party ahead of the central-right GER Party. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Pope Francis made his first public appearance on Sunday. This was after major intestinal surgery last week. AP correspondent Julie Walker has that story.
From a hospital balcony, the Pope greeted well-wishers as he stood for 10 minutes, smiling, waving, and offering thanks for the prayers for his recovery.
In questi giorni di ricovero in ospedale,
calling health care for all a precious good. He also prayed for the people of Haiti following the assassination of their president. The Vatican says the 84-year-old is on the road to recovery following July 4th surgery to remove a portion of his colon, which had narrowed due to inflammation. But it hasn't said when he'll be discharged from the hospital. I'm Julie Walker.
Protesters opposing Myanmar's junta held a flash mob on Sunday in the country's largest city of Yangon. In addition to holding up a three-fingered salute, the protesters chanted, "Pull up the roots of fascist army. People power. Give it back to the people. Our revolution must prevail," and more. The group of the protesters measured around 50 individuals. The short protest ended after crowds set fire to a Myanmar Armed Forces flag. These kinds of demonstrations have replaced the larger protests that initially took place after the military took over in February. And last week, a United Nations human rights investigator urged countries to impose additional sanctions on the military leadership to facilitate a return to civilian rule. Thomas Andrews, who is a special rapporteur on human rights in Myanmar, told the UN Human Rights Council that nearly 900 people have been killed since the February 1st coup, and some 5,200 people had been detained. Authorities in Bangladesh arrested the owner of a food processing factory for murder on Saturday. The plant caught fire last Thursday and resulted in the death of 52 individuals who were trapped inside the building. Authorities say that the structure was built without permission, had no emergency fire exits, and lacked adequate safety measures. A local police chief also said that an investigation was being launched into the allegation that the factory owner employed children. Novak Djokovic has tied Roger Federer as well as Rafael Nadal by claiming his 20th Grand Slam title at Wimbledon. Associated Press correspondent Graham Agars has the details.
Novak Djokovic has toughed out a four-set win over Matteo Berrettini to claim his sixth Wimbledon crown. The world number one was far from convincing during the 3-hour and 23-minute battle, but in the end found just enough to blunt the Italian's power and win 6-7, 6-4, 6-4, 6-3. It was his third consecutive win at the All England Club and now ties the 34-year-old Serb at 20 career major titles with 39-year-old Roger Federer and 35-year-old Rafael Nadal. He's also on track to become the first player since Rod Laver in 1969 to win a calendar year Grand Slam. All he needs now is the US Open. I'm Graham Agars.
Olympic officials have barred spectators from the games amid spiking coronavirus cases in Japan. Organizers have long said that they will push forward with the Olympic Games, but experts say the highly transmissible Delta variant should give them pause. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
The Tokyo Olympic torch relay, without spectators and no running on public streets, precedes these Olympic Games, which will go ahead without any spectators either. Eric Feigl-Ding is an epidemiologist and senior fellow at the Federation of American Scientists. He tells VOA the latest coronavirus mutation may as well share the Olympic slogan.
This virus, the Delta variant specifically, is the greatest threat that we have faced during this pandemic. It is faster, stronger, fitter in every way. The Olympic motto, Altius Citius Fortius, really applies to the Delta variant.
The International Olympic Committee's website says the Latin phrase means faster, higher, stronger, and the words encourage athletes to give their best. In the case of the coronavirus, the words translate to some of the highest case numbers Japan has seen in months. IOC President Thomas Bach says an absence of spectators changes the meaning of the games.
We all regret this decision for not having spectators, for the spectators, but even more so for the athletes, who will not be able to enjoy life, the Olympic atmosphere. But for the athletes, I think the feeling will be very different, because they will know that billions of people from around the globe are with them in their heart, that they are supporting them, that they are feeling with them.
And while Bach says athletes will share special moments with TV audiences, Feigl-Ding says they should share safe practices during and after the Olympics.
I would tell the Olympic organizers that it's incumbent on them that the games are not just a celebration of bringing people together in the name of sport, but also bringing people together safely and protecting the world.
Tokyo is under a state of emergency that will last throughout the Olympic Games. The opening ceremony is July 23rd. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And finally, high above Truth or Consequences, New Mexico on Sunday.
3, 2, 1, release, release, release. Clean release. Ignition. Good rocket motor burn.
And just like that, billionaire Richard Branson, aboard his Virgin Galactic space plane, soared above the Earth, reaching a total altitude of about 86 kilometers. It was the 22nd test flight of the Virgin Galactic Spaceship II design and took place just a week before Branson turned 71 years of age. From start to finish, the entire flight lasted about an hour, and afterward, Branson spoke about his journey.
I was once a kid with a dream, looking up to the stars. And now I'm an adult in a spaceship looking back to our beautiful Earth. To the next generation of dreamers, if we can do this, just imagine what you can do.
Former Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos is also slated to head into space. He's going to do that on July 20th aboard his own Blue Origin rocket. The date is 52 years to the day after man first set foot on the moon via the Apollo 11 mission. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington, be well, be safe, and have a great day.